Hello, and welcome to episode 58 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a show about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a special focus on exciting statistical analysis. The Cavs have just wrapped up a four-game sweep of the Indiana Pacers, winning a frantic Game 4 106-102 in Indianapolis. We're going to unpack that game and also get into a bunch of the series numbers and take stock of where the Cavs stand as they head into the second round. I am Keith Carter, an often surly, generally pessimistic, and perhaps overly obsessed longtime Cavs fan. My co-host is Arnav Chopra, a PhD candidate at MIT, numbers savant, LeBron James fanatic, and man whose insight and intuition on the NBA is shockingly prescient. How's it going, Arnav?
Going pretty well. I got a new mic, so hopefully the sound quality is better now.
Yeah, he sounds silky smooth. I'm sure everyone's very excited.
What did you think of this game?
Well, look, it's great. The Cavs swept. The first game of the second round is May 1st. So the Cavs get 7 full days of, it's 8 days until that game. So they get 7 full days of rest. And that is terrific. Their fourth quarter woes are a little bit irritating.
Yeah, which is kind of weird because in game 3, they made the comeback in the third and fourth quarter. Whereas in pretty much every other game so far, they've had fourth quarter woes.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I temporarily forgot about Game 3 until just now and was thinking that they'd been bad in the fourth quarter all four games. But yeah, they were terrific in the fourth quarter in Game 3. Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Shall we mention the difference between Game 3 and Game 4 and who was on the floor?
Well, I know where you're going with this, but yeah, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think one of the reasons why they've been so bad is because Kyrie Irving just dominates the ball. He has a 35% usage in the series, which is fine. I have nothing wrong with that. He's a great offensive player with that high of a usage. But he averaged 3 assists in 4 games. And he had 5 assists in 1 quarter of the first game. So like after that, he only racked up 7 assists in 3 games and 3 quarters.
Yeah.
And I don't even care as much about the actual assist numbers because sometimes, you know, you have assist opportunities, you have secondary assists, but the Cavs were not moving the ball well enough to the point where, like, he can just have a lot of secondary assists. He did not. So, for the most part, he was just not passing the ball at all.
He wasn't that efficient on offense either, right? So, if he was scoring at some super high efficiency, then that would sort of mitigate the lack of involving others on offense, but he wasn't doing that either.
Yeah, he had a 50 true shooting percentage. Which
for the series?
For the series, which is below league. It's not bad, but like it's below league average. So it's not like the shots you're getting are particularly efficient anyway. And for the record, the Cavs had a 119 offensive rating before tonight's game, which means they're getting about 1.19 points per possession, which is way above whatever Kyrie's getting, which is 1 point per possession.
Right. Yeah, and I got real tired of seeing Jeff Teague run past him and get easy scoop layups at the rim. So, you know, low offensive efficiency, low involvement of other players, and atrocious defense is not really what I'm hoping for out of Kyrie Irving.
And before tonight's game, his advanced stats were atrocious too, and I'm sure they still are, because tonight's game wasn't any better. I think he had a negative 8.4 box plus minus.
Yeah,
and for
I
a guy
saw
with
that.
35% usage rate, that is like it's really hard to win games. I'm actually surprised we swept this series. I mean, okay, I'm not surprised because of LeBron, but we like one guy with that high of a usage should not be this bad.
Yeah, that high of a usage and that sort of inefficiency. So what do you think is going on? Like, is he hurt? Is it just unlucky? Is it some combination?
A little hurt, which is causing him to be not as efficient. But in his mind, he needs to keep searching for his shot because he thinks that if he just gets it going once, he'll finally figure it out. But that hasn't happened. He's gotten it going a few times in a few quarters. Like, third quarter was great. He had 16 points on good efficiency. And then fourth quarter came around, and then he kept taking the same shots, and they just stopped going in.
It's
like, you
funny.
Take bad shots, they're going to go in sometimes, and most of the time they're not going to go in, and that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention it. So I happened to see, so apparently, so the Cavs are on ABC for most of these playoff games, or they're on TNT. And then also, I guess Fox Sports Ohio does the games?
They do the first round, yes. That's correct.
Okay. That's weird. So if you live in Cleveland, can you watch either channel, or how does that even work?
Yeah, I mean, you can hear Fred and AC on those Fox Sports Ohio broadcasts.
But doesn't that like cannibalize ABC's ratings? Okay, well, whatever. I saw the post-game interview with Allie Clifton, and she interviewed Kyrie Irving. And she was, I can't remember what the question was, but Kyrie said, like, well, I think I played well tonight, but I wish in the fourth quarter I could have made a few more shots. So even in retrospect, he doesn't think like, oh, I wish I could have involved my teammates more. He's like, oh, I'm totally fine with being a complete black hole. I just wish that a few more of them went in. So yeah, I mean, I'm just sort of like adding on to your point here that his perspective is that this is the right way to play. And yeah, I mean, it's frustrating.
He's been better than this. This was his worst playoff series ever. And that includes the series where he was injured against the Bulls.
Yeah.
This was by far his worst playoff series.
Yeah.
In fact, this might be his worst four-game stretch, honestly. Like, this is not far away from that.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was really bad when he first came back from the knee injury last year and so forth. But yeah, in terms of like when he's ostensibly healthy.
But it's not just the fact that he was missing shots and like not doing anything else. It's that he was doing it at such a high usage. He had the ball in his hands a lot.
Yeah, he did.
Anyway, so I think one of the things I was mad about was like LeBron should have just taken the ball out of his hands at the end and be like, I'm running the show. Stand in the corner or do something else.
Stand in the corner, and if you're open for a quarter three, take it. Otherwise, you're done. It's interesting. I've been reading the Brian Windhorst book, and there's I don't know if you've gotten to the part yet where they talk about the game where Kyrie had zero assists and LeBron sort of spazzed out about it.
Yeah, I read that part. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I mean Kyrie had zero assists tonight on 10 of 25 shooting, 1 of 7 from 3. One wonders what LeBron's reaction will be.
He has developed some rapport with LeBron by now, so like I don't think LeBron's going to do anything about him. But
that was during their first season together,
right? But I wish LeBron or Lou would actually like essentially chide him and be like, "Hey, this is not acceptable the way you're playing right now."
Yeah, I saw the Lou post-game conference. Somebody asked him about, asked him to evaluate Kyrie Irving's game. And he said, I thought he played great. Now, you know, if he's going to chide him, maybe he'll do it privately. Or maybe he hasn't actually looked at the film yet to have like a good sort of evaluation. Like we have the benefit of poring over the box score for the last half an hour. So who knows? But yeah, he hasn't done it yet.
Well, yeah, I don't expect him to say anything in public. If he had, I would have been a little angry. So just do it in private. We're never going to find out about it if he does it or not. But
right.
Or maybe we will through.
Yeah, we'll find out in the book that comes out in 18 months.
Yeah, sure. But
do you think?
Yeah, it's also just the fact that, you know, like at least in game one, was it game one or game two, where like he was again very inefficient. Actually, it was game one, yeah. But in the end, he at least got a couple of steals and he played some decent defense. Like tonight, that wasn't even the case. He was basically jacking up shot after shot. And these weren't good shots. These were bad shots. Like Love didn't make anything today either, which is kind of terrible because that's two of your big three.
We'll get to him in a minute.
But at least like he was taking wide open threes and good shots for the most part. He had a couple of ISOs that were questionable. But again, like it wasn't all of his shots. Kyrie had bad shots all around.
Yeah. Kyrie's box score is not that terrible. He did have the three blocks and the steal. So, you know, the sort of superficial defensive stats are there. He was plus four in a game the Cavs won by four. But yeah, that just doesn't really tell the proper story. What is your level of hope for what he'll do in the next round?
Well, in my opinion, Cavs in general don't care too much about the process and they mostly care about the results. So yeah. They're not going to fix anything until they lose a game, or maybe they lose two games in a row like they did in the Toronto series. Who knows when that's going to happen? Maybe it happens the next round. Maybe it doesn't happen at all until the finals. It's going to happen at some point and they're going to have to make some adjustments. Whether it'll be in the next round or it'll be in round four, who knows?
Well, do you think that adjustment will be Kyrie suddenly passing more? Like what would that adjustment even be?
This is his worst series. Like, he can't, maybe he can get worse.
I think that, like even if nothing changes, he should probably get at least a little bit better.
Yeah, he shot 21% from three. Like, that's obviously fluky, right? Like, that's hopefully, unless he's injured.
Unless he's hurt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he can. He's shown us the ability to pass well. Like this, this is not something that he can't do. And the only passes he was making were to Tristan Thompson, who either kept getting stripped or would just brick the shot.
Yeah, I have some concerns about Thompson and Love as well. Okay, so hold on. Let me just call a timeout here really quick. Okay, the Cavs did win. They swept the Pacers. They're getting 8 days of rest. We are going to talk about like some of the awesome things. Like, I don't even know if we've said LeBron James's name yet. I guess we have, like, in reference to him yelling at Kyrie. But yeah, LeBron was sublime again tonight. We'll talk about that. But yeah, we're just expressing this frustration because, you know, at the end of the road here is going to be a really great team from the Western Conference, probably the Warriors. And it would be nice to see the Cavs showing some reasonable ability to overcome them. And right now, I just don't feel like that's really in the cards. But
optimist would say that one of the big three played basically as bad as one can possibly play mm-hmm. through a four-game series. The second of the big three shot well for maybe two games and didn't really shoot that well in the other two games. And only one of the big three showed up, and the Cavs still swept a pretty, like, an average team, I would say, who had a really nice superstar shooting really well. So, like, that's the optimistic view. Like, they have a lot to uncover here, right, in terms of potential. It's just a question of whether they can do it or not.
Right. Yeah. So with that said, I want to complain about some more things. So Kevin Love was scored 5 points. He was 2 of 13 from the field today. He missed about 100 layups by my count. He did have 16 rebounds. He did have a nice defensive stop on Paul George in the last 2 minutes there. Somebody joke tweeted on Twitter that, like, I guess whenever the Cavs need a stop, they'll just dust off Kevin Love for defense. Mm-hmm. That was like sort of a callback to his defense on Steph Curry in the final minute of the finals last year. So he did do things. Tyronn Lue in the postgame conference was like, look, his shot wasn't falling, but he did other stuff. He's going to have cold nights. But man, 2 of 13 and all of those missed layups, it's really frustrating. He's become elite at drawing fouls. To my eye, he almost focuses a little bit too much on drawing fouls. Like he's almost like not even trying to make the shot because he's just expecting the foul to call. He had 0 free throws tonight. And if you were to take away some of the, you know, ticky-tack calls he gets in his favor sometimes, his field goal percentage would be a lot lower. So anyway, that's what I meant. It's true shooting percentage. So yeah, I'd just like to see, I don't know. It's just frustrating. He's been shooting poorly basically since the All-Star break. And I'm not sure, or really since, what was it? What, he had some bad salmon or something? He ate some fish on the road and he got December, food poisoning?
End of December, yeah.
Yeah, and since then, he's really not been shooting well.
It's been, he's been okay. It's not bad, like 35 or whatever percent, but still, you're not great at all. I will say this, with him, it's again a question of results and process, right? Like, the process, I think, was fine for the most part. He had a couple of bad ISOs that I thought he shouldn't have taken. Maybe 3 bad ISOs, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. But he did a lot of other stuff that I like. 16 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds. One of them was a very important one at the end. Again, like, I thought he was actually pretty good defensively today. He was moving his feet. Like, whenever he switched out, he was doing a good job. He was kind of being left to dry by Kyrie. But for the most part, I thought he was solid defensively too. But again, like, you can't control the results. You can control the process. And for him, like, the only change we can say be like, okay, stop taking as many ISOs. LeBron and Kyrie, we need to run some better plays for you that gets you more open shots. And that's pretty much it. Like, what else can you do with him? Kyrie, there's a lot to fix. Here, just be like, make more shots. That's it.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. So yeah, those 2 or 3 ISOs notwithstanding, his shot selection tonight was fine. He wasn't forcing things. He just was missing open shots.
Those 5 threes were wide open.
Okay. I think I agree with that.
And of course, draw more fouls, because, like, I think it's kind of unacceptable that he played 34 minutes and had 0 free throw attempts.
Right. I mean, look, he's generally very, very good at that. So I'm willing to chalk that up to just sort of, you know, perturbations and luck. But we'll see heading into the second round. Thad Young and Miles Turner are not exactly that great defensively. So it would have been nice to see if he could have gone off a little bit, but maybe next round.
He did have that great game 2, was probably one of the most efficient nights ever. But
he did, right? 28 points on 7 shots. It was pretty impressive, or 27 points. He had 2 nice touchdown passes tonight, which are always fun, but also 4 turnovers. So,
he was kind of pushing it inside. every time Tristan's on the floor, I feel bad for him because it's not his fault. These guys like LeBron and Kyrie, they start making really tough passes to him, right? Like
to Tristan. They think
he can, yeah, to Tristan. And like, he doesn't have the best hands.
Yeah.
He has okay hands. He's not like Mozgov's hands, but they're not the best hands out there.
Yeah. And Tristan is the second to last starter I want to complain about today. So
yeah.
I'm glad you said
that. I'll just say one thing. Yeah, so I'm not saying it's his fault, but it's just the question of like, guys are forcing too much to him when he's on the floor. And for the most part, like, he isn't that skilled near the basket, right? Like, he'll make a wide open dunk or whatever here and there. Maybe he'll make a small hook shot, but.
Yeah, James and Irving try these, you know, what they call pocket passes to Thompson quite a bit, and it's just not an effective play. And it's been more ineffective lately because I think Thompson's a little bit hurt. Yeah. And lineups with Thompson in them have not been performing that well lately. Yeah. Lineups with Fry have been sort of magically better. They're not as good defensively, but putting Fry out there instead of Thompson really seems to open things up.
Yeah.
Also,
I'll say this.
I'm worried about Thompson there because I think that Fry will be sort of unplayable against a team like the Warriors because his defense is so bad and the Warriors will just carve that up. So, yeah, unless the Cavs continue to score, like, I think they're scoring something hilarious, like 1.4 points per possession. Yeah.
Just overall. Yeah. But that lineup, like you're saying, is even better.
Right. And yeah, I have concern that if they can't figure out a way to be more efficient offensively with Tristan on the floor, that they'll have some, you know, there's some trouble ahead. But yeah, we'll see.
That's a salient point. I think what they need to do is just stop passing the ball to him that much, unless he's like wide open or something. And for the most part, just relegate him to offensive rebounding, because that actually adds a lot of value against a team like the Warriors, because not only does it get you more opportunities, it also kind of slows them down because they have to box out. They have to put two guys on him to box him out, which essentially makes it so they can't run back in transition. And that happened a lot in Game 7, if you look at it. Like, specifically, like, Tristan Thompson was, like, such a menace on the glass that, like, Iguodala and Draymond Green both had to try to box him out and essentially would slow them back down in transition.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Twitter speculate, Mike Zavagno, I need to figure out how to pronounce his name because I bring him up like every other podcast. But in any case, he was talking about Tristan. And so he's a huge proponent of the Channing Frye lineups. But he was saying that he thinks the solution with Tristan has to be Tristan setting more on ball screens. And I think what he was saying is if he sets an on ball screen, then his guy can't help. And if Tristan runs to the offensive glass, like you create a situation there where Tristan is at least helpful on offense. Like right now, he's almost completely useless on offense. Like he stands in the middle trying to get an offensive rebound, but his man can cheat off. And that sort of bogs down the Cavs offense. So unless they can do something where like Tristan is involved somehow, it doesn't necessarily even have to be scoring. That's going to probably continue to be a problem, but.
It's weird because they had it figured out and they've gone away from it. Like, they did it pretty well last season. Like, his lineups had ridiculous offensive efficiency with him in there. Obviously, Fries were still better, but still, like, these were solid.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is probably JR. And so now we're moving to the fourth cap starter that I want to complain about. I mean, JR just hasn't been... He's been low volume and sort of low efficiency on offense since he came back. And
well, ideally, if you have low efficiency, you're low volume, so I don't mind the volume as much.
Yeah, there's a famous Woody Allen movie. I can't remember which one it is, but he's at a restaurant and the portions are small, and he says something like, "Oh, the food is so bad, and the portions are so small too." And yeah, if you're low efficiency, like you better at least be low volume as well. I guess you're right. It's good that he's also been low efficiency.
Low volume.
Yeah. Well, yeah. there's a yin and yang there. He had a really, really stupid incident at the end of the game. So the Cavs were up one at that point, right?
No, three.
They were up three. Oh, yeah. That's right. They were up three. They forced Paul George into a turnover, and J.R. Smith and Irving had a 2-on-1. It's hard to know what it was going to develop into because J.R. Smith immediately tried to pass the ball behind his back to Irving and turned it over, which gave the ball back to Indiana with 8 seconds left, something like that.
And Paul George got a decent look. It wasn't a great look, but
it was a pretty good look.
Yeah, but he was kind of off balance. But like, anyway,
yes, it was frantic. It was frantic, but like, yeah, like if you get a shot like that with 8 seconds left in the game, like I don't know what possibly better they could have gotten. Anyway, he missed everything, right? It hit the glass, but yeah, I don't think it hit the glass,
and LeBron got the rebound, and that was it.
Yeah,
that could have tied the game, and I would have been so angry at that point.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a boneheaded play on J.R. Smith's part. In the post game, the first question, or maybe the second question for Tyronn Lue was, what did you think of that JR sequence? And he just sort of laughed and he said he didn't see it. And he put his head down and like sort of shook his head and smiled. And then they moved on to the next question. Bad play by JR.
Yeah. And that's not even his worst play of the season. Do you remember that play where he just left his guy to say hi to Jason Terry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, J.R. Smith, I think this is like a sports cliche, but J.R. is going to be J.R. And when he's playing well offensively and he's locked in on the offensive end, he typically locks in on the defensive end as well and is a huge plus for this team. When he is not being efficient offensively, everything sort of collapses and you still get the weird mental mistakes and it just makes him seem sort of intolerable. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of hope for him going forward, actually.
Who do you think had a better series, Kyrie Irving or Iman Shumpert?
Well, in terms of expectations, Shumpert.
In terms of impact.
Wow.
Actual positive impact.
Well,
you can have negative impact on a game, too.
Yes. So getting a league average efficiency volume scorer is actually a pretty valuable thing, right? Because
depends it's on not who like your teammates you can just... are. If your teammates are bad, then yes. But if your teammates are LeBron James and Kevin Love, then it's not that valuable. Right? Like they can do a better job.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm using my brain power here. So I think you think Iman Shumpert was less
not valuable.
I thought
he was slightly positive. I thought Irving was hugely negative. That's it.
I think I agree, actually. Like if we were starting Darren Williams, who, by the way, well, we'll get into the players that I like shortly here. I guess you're right. Like Shumpert would probably.
He had a better impact, I thought, on this series than Kyrie Irving, just because Kyrie was so negative and that's it. Like, it's not like he's a better player or anything. Obviously not, but.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. I agree. Let's talk about like the good players. So how about that LeBron guy?
Yeah, he had 4 steals again. I thought his defense won this game, by the way. He had that 3 at the end, but he had a couple of solid steals. He had 2 blocks. Again, he had another game where 2 games ago where he had 4 blocks and 4 steals. He's just been very solid defensively, I thought. And he's playing heavy minutes. It's not just like him playing like 15 minutes and just putting everything on that end. He's playing 44 minutes a night. And he's playing.
He may have averaged more than 44 minutes a game in the series. I'm not sure. Tonight he played 44 minutes, 44 seconds. It was really 45. He's just, he's playing a ton of minutes, but we've been through this already. But yeah, I mean, I'm totally fine with his minutes load.
Because especially he gets a week off now.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to get 8 days off. Let's say that they decided to play him only quote unquote, 39 minutes, right? But that lowers your chance of winning the game by 12% or something.
And you get another 39 minutes added on top of that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's probably a much bigger change than 12% because, LeBron, the team is just not very good with LeBron off the floor, especially when Irving's playing the way he played. Although Irving was okay in the stretch at the end of the third quarter when LeBron got his.
Oh, he was good. Yeah, he had 16 points in the third quarter. But again, he's taking bad shots. They're going to go in at times and it's going to look fine. And then most of the time it's not going to go in.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, anytime I accidentally say something nice about Irving, you quickly correct me and appropriately so. Like he was not good. LeBron's day was sort of interesting. I haven't seen the final shot chart, but I know when he was at 25 points, his average field goal made distance was 1.4 feet. Of course, he made that 3. And I think that might have been the only jumper he made all night. He made 13 shots. Can you remember another jumper?
Nope.
I don't think he did. And if he did, it would have been the late fourth quarter. And I think I would have remembered it. So, he was just, I mean, they just can't stop him from getting to the rim. It was awesome.
Most people can't, by the way. Most teams can't. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Basically, I don't think any team can. But he had 4 steals, which is incredible. Yeah, like LeBron, I mean, it's just, I just don't have enough superlatives for this guy, right? Like, he's at the age of, what, 32, almost 33 now? 32 and a half.
Yeah.
And he's still by far and away the best player in the NBA, especially from what you can see.
It's so confusing how he can mold his game to whatever he needs to do and then just freaking does it. It sounds so dumb gushing about him. We do it so much and he's so incredible, but like, just when you sit back for a second and just consider, like, look, this guy is actually a human, but he's just so much better at this thing than any other human. Like, at the end of the game, like, the Cavs were down two, right?
Yes.
When he made his three. So the Cavs are down two with like a minute left. The Pacers were on like a freaking 19-4 run, right? And I think it was 102-103 or something.
102-100.
And then is that what it was? Okay. And then LeBron just comes down, dribbles 20 seconds off the clock, gets on the left break with a hand in his face, and just cans a three. And look, you have to – he's had a lot of opportunities to take shots, but that one went in, and it just – I mean, he – once again, look, I mean, it's just a one-man force. Right?
And it's the steals after that. Oh, and then also, he shut down Paul George pretty much at the end. Do you remember that ISO that Paul George tried to do on him?
Yeah, he went in like twice. He tried to go in and then it didn't work. Then he tried to go in again and it, you know, it was a turnover. Right. It's like, okay, exactly. Nice try, PG. See you next year. It's just...
maybe in a different uniform.
Yeah. Just a quick note on that. I watched his post-game press conference and, of course, he was asked... one of the questions was... what are you doing in free agency? And he was like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. And then somebody said, like, well, you said you wanted to see certain things from the team. Like, what do you want to see from the team? He's like, I don't want to talk about that. And it just seemed to me like he's out of there. Then they asked him about the all NBA team thing. And yeah, just a quick primer on that. If he is named to an all NBA team, the Pacers will already be able to offer him the most money. But if he's named to an all NBA team, they'll be able to offer him a lot more money than any other team will. So they asked him about that. Like, what do you think about that? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it. And then finally, he was talking about how last year he had George Hill and Jan Mahinmi to help him with like veteran leadership. And this year he felt like that was a bigger burden for him. And yeah, he just seemed discontent to me.
And he was left with Lance Stephenson.
Yeah, right. He has to deal with Lance Stephenson. Like, Lance Stephenson had an okay night, but still, like,
he was still not that good.
But still, like, when it mattered, he imploded. I think it was the end of game two or three where they like dared him to take the three and he takes it and misses, and then at the end of this game, like, he turns it over and then fouls, and it's just like, what are you doing, dude? So anyway, yeah, that's got to be frustrating for Paul George to deal with. And like, look, you know, he probably just wants to go play in LA. I'd rather play in LA. Like, if you're gonna lose anyway, may as well go do it in a place that's more fun.
Well, he still has a year left on his contract, so I'm assuming they're gonna trade him to try to get some value out of him, right?
No, isn't he an unrestricted free agent?
The year after, not this offseason. So he has a year.
Oh, I thought he was an unrestricted free agent now. No, oh, okay.
The whole talk is that he can leave.
Whether or not they'll trade him.
Yeah, whether or not they'll trade him. Yeah.
I see.
That's why I think Boston didn't pull the trigger, because they know, like, if he lost, his value would have gotten an even more now. So, like, they can probably get him cheaper in this offseason than they could have at the trade deadline.
Yeah, except if they had him, they might have been able to beat the Cavs in the playoffs. But anyway, that's another conversation for another day.
What's the point of that, right?
Yeah, sure. But I mean, if the Cavs had that attitude, they would have just folded too.
But the Cavs, of course, LeBron James, so I think they're never going to fold. But
that's a fair point. Let's see, anything else from the box score tonight? Oh, yeah. So Deron Williams was incredible again, 4-4 from the field. He made both of his threes. He was 4-5 from the line. He had 14 points on four shots. He is pretty good defensively. When he's scoring with this kind of efficiency, and like watching the LeBron James, Deron Williams pick and roll is a lot of fun. They finally decided that they're going to do that. They didn't do that almost all the regular season. He's been what a revelation he's been.
He's also hitting his three, which helps. Like, that'll cool down. So, like, let's not get carried away. Like, this type of efficiency will not continue. But still, like, just his passing, his vision, sort of the way he dictates the offense on the floor. Like, Irving could learn a lot from that, right?
Yeah, zero turnovers and 13 minutes played.
Yeah. A little too many fouls, but still, I'll live with it.
Yeah, you're right. I was just noticing that four personal fouls. That's irritating.
Yeah, he was getting beat a lot, which is like at his age isn't surprising.
No. No, it's not.
He's like 45 years old, 50 years old.
Right. Yeah, he's getting up there. He's one of the few players older than LeBron.
Why do you think Richard Jefferson did not get any playing time today?
They asked Tyronn Lue about that. So he said there were sort of two things about it. The first is Iman Shumpert has been really good on Paul George defensively, and they like that matchup that they discovered in game two. The second was they think that Korver's shooting ability is a bigger value add on offense. And both of those things are true, I think. I think Shumpert is better defensively on George, and Korver is better offensively than Jefferson. But I think Jefferson's better offensively than Shumpert, and he's better defensively than Korver. And so, yeah, you could imagine like striking that somewhere in the middle. But yeah, that's all Lou said. He was just like, we liked the matchups.
It's fine. So, yeah. Like, they're never going to do this, but like they could technically replace JR with RJ, and they probably wouldn't miss a beat just because how bad JR has been. But I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying like RJ can get some minutes here.
I'm not convinced that they are not going to make a change come the Eastern Conference
finals. Oh, if they start losing games, they're going to make so many changes. We just don't know if they're going to work out. But
right.
Changes are going to happen for sure.
JR is going to have to start doing something or else he's going to end up he's going to end up benched. So,
or being traded this offseason, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who you trade JR to. Because no one's going to want that contract, so you're going to have to take some sort of poison pill. But anyway, yeah, we'll see. Look, maybe JR is going to like turn it around and be amazing. That's got to be the hope here. So I made a list of things that I learned in this series.
Before we do that, should we talk about Shumpert quickly?
Sure.
One of my gripes with him throughout the regular season was that he was, A, not defending properly, like, and not putting the requisite amount of effort, and B, was that he was trying to do way too much on offense. Like he would dribble the ball for 10 seconds, then take some random long two, or, you know, he would hold the ball instead of just taking the corner three, or just make a bad pass or just a bad read. He's not doing any of that anymore. He's actually like at least putting effort on defense. And I thought it was pretty solid defense for the most part. Like I think Paul George has actually had some trouble against him, which I'm not saying.
It's surprising.
Yeah. It's not all because of him, but like at least he's putting in the effort.
Yeah, and
he's
there's some sample size stuff here too, but like what happened.
But like I'm seeing it with my eyes that he's putting in effort, and that's great, right? Like this is way better than what we saw in the regular season. And on offense, like he had, what, four shots today? Three of them were threes, wide open threes. One, he made a corner three, and that's fine. Like I'll take those shots any day of the week.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you need to do on offense. Just stand in the corner, take the ball, make the pass if someone's covering you, and if not, take the open three and that's it.
Right. And yeah, just with regards to him versus JR, I mean, look, if JR is only going to take four shots a game and he's not going to create on his own anyway, Shumpert can play that role. And with the way that JR is playing defense right now, Shumpert might actually be better.
Absolutely. He's been better than him this series. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the Cavs still have some time to sort that out.
The problem when you're not offense out of like your complementary players is like your big three has to be on point every single game, right? Like, and with Kyrie not playing well, then you have other issues. But
well, the Cavs have been getting a lot out of Williams and Fry this series, and I don't know if that's going to continue.
That's a good point. Yeah,
it's sort of papered over the Irving and Love, let's say so-so offensive play.
But yeah, so as for Shumpert, like this is basically what we wanted him to do the entire year, and he's like finally doing it. And it's no surprise that he's finally having pluses in those plus minus stats, right? Like year long, he was having minus five, minus 10, minus 12.
I know. And anytime he was on the floor. Yeah. Plus five.
Plus five. Sorry. Yeah.
And that point's crucial. Also, he seems so much more hyped up. Like when he's on the bench, he's like always getting up and, you know, he does that thing where he's like, you know, flexing his arms and he's shouting at people. And like, he's just so much more engaged than he was in the regular season. It's great to see. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, I'll definitely take this kind of play from him. And this is basically what I expected. Peak Shumpert to be. Obviously, I did not expect that to happen this playoffs, but it's happening. So I'm happy about that.
Right. Okay, you want to go to our list of things we learned this series?
Sure, absolutely.
So my first one is Paul George never goes to the hole anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I've always thought of him as sort of a LeBron James light kind of guy. Like he, you know, is not quite as good of a rebounder, not quite as good of a passer, not quite as good defensively, but he's, you know, like his game was like very, very similar to LeBron's. But this regular season, LeBron attempted 633 shots from within 5 feet, and Paul George attempted 229 shots from less than 5 feet. So George is almost, I mean, I'm not going to say exclusively, but yeah, just for comparison, 15 to 19 feet, George took 337, 20 to 24, 292, 25 to 29, 286 shots. So he's taken like, I don't know, what is that? 300, 400. He's, you know, taken over 1,000 shots that are all jumpers and less than 230 that are within 5 feet. And that kind of offense is really puts a ceiling on like how efficient he can be as a scorer. LeBron's efficiency knows no bounds. Like he, like 60% of his shots are like from within 2 feet. And, you know, as long as he's doing that, like his efficiency has no ceiling. But yeah, George, look, he's just going to get older. That's only going to go down. Like, I don't think he's going to age. Well, I'm concerned that his offensive game won't age particularly well.
I have always been on the side that he's a little overrated simply because he's been shooting really well in the playoffs and everyone sees that on national TV.
Right.
And like, but really my gauge for players is how they do when their shots aren't going in. Cause in the finals, when like it's waning moments of game six or game seven, like these shots typically don't go in because you're so tired, right? Yeah. Like you don't have your legs underneath you. So what are you going to do then? And how are you going to help your team? And with Paul George, to be fair, he's doing a lot of stuff. So it's not just that. In this series, again, I want to reiterate that he's been amazing, right? But in the regular season, before March, he wasn't that incredible. Like his efficiency was so, like 56, 55 true shooting percentage. That's above average, but it's not great. It's not great for a superstar. Like he was passing the ball, but he was pouting a little bit. And defensively, again, he was not himself. He again got it going after March. But for the most part, like a majority of the year, he wasn't that great, or at least as good as we've seen in this playoff. And like you mentioned, like when he's shooting so many jumpers and not taking it to the hole, it adds a lot of variance to your play, right?
Right.
Because like tonight, he was 5 of 19 or 5 of 20 or something. And
5 of 21.
5 of 21, sorry. And his shot didn't go in, and then it hurt his team a lot. Whereas LeBron, he wasn't, like you said, he shot one jumper maybe tonight, and everything else was taken to the hole. So like with LeBron, right, you get the consistency from game to game. He'll at least give you like 25, 30 points on like 56 plus true shooting percentage almost every night.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit unfair to be compared to the best player, in my opinion, in the history of the game. Like that's a high bar to clear.
Paul George was amazing this series. Like I want to reiterate this. Like if it wasn't for him, like this would have been a 4-game sweep with like a 20 plus margin or something ridiculous. Right.
I no longer think that he can be, I'm not sure if I thought it before, but I definitely don't think it now. He can't be the best player on a championship winning team.
But I think he would be a great second guy. Yes. He would be an amazing second guy.
Yes.
Like if he's getting wide open threes, every time he took a three, I thought it was going in just because how good he was in that series.
He does. I mean, look, he is a pure shooter, right? He shoots 90 whatever percent from the line.
Exactly.
And yeah, that boy can shoot. But yeah, I mean, look, if you make your dinner on shooting jump shots beyond 15 feet, like some nights it's going to go great, but on a lot of nights it's not going to go great. And if he can't do something else, and he really can't offensively, because he's not as good of a passer. And if you're not going to the hole, you can't draw defense away from your teammates as well as LeBron can. And yeah, his ceiling's a little bit lower than I guess I thought it was.
Yeah, but he, again, like he played like a top five player in this series. So like
he did. He was terrific. Yeah. I should be a little bit careful here. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. The thing that I learned was that his offensive game is much more centered around jump shooting than I used to think.
Yeah. And that's frankly been his, been the case for him since he had that injury.
Broke his leg.
Major injury. Broke his leg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, like, kind of makes sense, right? Like, you're a little more scared now of driving it to the basket. And, like, we can't really blame him for that, per se, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I agree. So you want me to go to my next one, or do you want to alternate, or how should we do this?
No, how about you finish all yours, and then we'll
okay. Jeff Teague is a lot better than I sort of give him credit for. So his RPM is basically the same as Kyrie Irving's. Kyrie Irving is 1.83, Jeff Teague's 1.59. He was a far superior player to Irving in this series. His defense is pretty good. Like, look, he's not a terrific defensive player, but when he gets switched onto LeBron James, at least he tries. Can you imagine, like, Irving trying to guard LeBron James? That would not go well. And, like, you know, like, don't you think that, like, Teague, like, really, like, there were a couple possessions where, like, LeBron was forced into jumpers.
LeBron today.
Yeah. Like, he tries. And I kind of like his demeanor. Like, he's very, very steady. I felt really bad for him did you notice when he got the technical foul? It happened in the third quarter, I think. So anyway, he kicked the ball and they called a technical on him. And I just felt bad. I mean, look, this is the third year in a row he's been swept by LeBron, and he's a pretty good player, and he's out there, like, playing pretty well in the playoffs. Like, what else is he supposed to do?
And he was shooting the three really well. Like, he had a big three tonight too, at the end of the game.
Yeah, and, like, to the extent that Irving was dog crap this series, like, you got to at least give some of that credit to Jeff Teague.
Yeah, absolutely.
And anyway, yeah, that guy can play. You know, he's getting up there in age, so you're not
going to... He's like an average point guard, I would say, in the league, which is an above-average player, right? Like,
right.
If that makes sense.
Right. I'm sort of surprised by... I always think of him on, like, that sort of third or fourth tier. And, you know, look, you know, he averaged, what, 15 points and 8 assists and something like that. But he can rebound a little bit, and he's pretty good.
Kind of decent game, yeah. Like, he would be the best backup in the league, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. All right, moving on. Yeah, we already talked about this. Iman Shumpert may have a higher defensive ceiling than I thought going into the series.
Oh, damn it, that was going to be one of my...
well, do you want to pay some lip service to? You want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, so I was just going to say that Shumpert, I thought for the most part, was done as a positive defender, but clearly that's not the case. Now, maybe this is a small sample size issue, and once he starts getting playing time again, he gets complacent and stops doing the same things that he's been doing this series. Mm-hmm. But at least we saw something from him that was not the same, like, basically not what we saw in the regular season. Like, this series was more reminiscent of, like, 2014 or 2015 Iman Shumpert than it was of, like, 2016 Iman Shumpert.
Yeah. I mean, we unpacked this sort of before the series started, and, like, trying to figure out what Iman would be. And, like, we both did not have high hopes for that. And yeah, I mean, now I'll be surprised. I don't know if I'll be surprised, but I'll be disappointed if he plays poorly defensively in the second round. Like,
he has no excuse now. It's not an injury issue, because we saw him do it for three games in this series.
Right. Right. I'm sort of excited to see if he can continue being, you know.
And, like, his defense might be pretty important in the finals, like on Klay Thompson, or, like, if JR's not JR. If he's on himself, then, like, Shumpert's going to have to play a lot of minutes, because we don't have any other wings.
Shumpert playing well defensively is such a possibly positive thing for the Cavs heading into a potential finals matchup that, I almost don't want to get too excited about it, because I'm not sure if it's real. But, yeah, we're going to get at least 8 more games to figure out if it's real before the finals potentially come. Let's see. My next one is, I don't even really want to talk about this, but Lance Stephenson was vaguely effective in this series. I think part of that was the Cavs' game plan. Like, they wanted him to shoot, right? Like, they would never put, yeah, like, whenever he touched the ball, they would basically evacuate his side of the court, daring him to shoot. But today, you know, was his third sort of decent offensive game of the series. He was 9 of 15, 4 of 9 from 3. He had 22 points on 15 shots, only 2 turnovers, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. That's sort of surprising for a guy that was basically not playing most of the season because nobody wanted him. Do you think he will be... how many games do you think he'll play? Do you think he'll be on a team to play 82 games next year? Let's set aside the injury thing.
Oh, yeah. He's getting some sort of a contract next season. I think he showed at least enough where like a team's going to take another chance on him.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, he just sort of reminds me of Michael Beasley. Like
I wouldn't want him, but
I don't want him either because he's such a nut.
Yeah.
But
there's a reason the Cavs wanted him to shoot, right? Like they were leaving him wide open at pretty much anything outside of the. Now, I had a gripe with how they were defending him, which was that they were giving him wide open lanes to the basket and he can make layups. So like you don't want to do that. But
when you sag off three steps, like he gets three steps of acceleration before you can. Yeah. So that, it was almost like
it's a little too much, but it's fine. Like the strategy itself was OK. The execution wasn't perfect, but.
They were basically baiting him. It was like a, you know, how much do we have to tempt this guy to?
It also like takes other guys out of rhythm. It takes the ball out of Paul George's hands. And like, this guy isn't that efficient that he can kill you. Like, you're not going to bait like Steph Curry to shoot, right?
Right.
Like, he's going to kill you with his efficiency, so.
Right. Okay. So that's, all right, that's it for Lance Stevenson. I really don't want to talk about him. My final one, or the final interesting one, is I was impressed with Ty Lue in this series. I had an issue with something he did today, which I guess I'll get to in a minute. But at some point, he realized that the lineup of Deron Williams, Channing Frye, and LeBron James was really, really good. And he did whatever he could to play it a bunch of minutes in sort of games, some of game 2, but really in game 3 and game 4. And for a guy whose rotations I was frustrated with all year, like I thought he played Shumpert too much. He did a bunch of things that we've talked about plenty. I was surprised to see that sort of adjustment on the fly. And
can I add something to that? Because that was actually mine was very similar to that. So what I was going to say is I think one of the things that I noticed was that Lue is not scared to adjust. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, who knows? But he will make adjustments, and he does not care about what other people think, right? Like, he sat down Shumpert in the beginning, and the only reason Shumpert played again was because JR went down.
Right.
He benched Kyrie and Love for the fourth quarter of Game 3. Yeah. I was fine with the Kyrie benching. I still have some gripes with the Love benching, but I'll take it, whatever.
Yeah.
In Game 4, he played that lineup again, just like a lot of minutes, like you said. And his after timeout plays have been solid as they were all season long.
Yes, yes. I actually just pulled up the Channing Frye, LeBron James, Deron Williams 3-man lineup. So they played 46 minutes in the series, and they had an offensive rating of 139.6, defensive rating of 116.5, which is bad, but the Cavs can't play defense, as we all know. That's a net rating of 23.1.
And that was because he took that risk, and it paid off pretty handsomely.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
that's
a
lot of minutes. 46 minutes. That's almost an entire game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I have more faith now than I ever have that Tyronn Lue will, if things are going poorly, he'll adjust. And that's something that's
a lot of coaches do that. Like, Doc Rivers never adjusts within the game, right? And that's been one of the gripes that people have had against him for a long time.
He'll just keep bashing his head against the wall, doing the same thing until it either works or they lose. I do want to say something, a specific complaint about today. So the Cavs were up, I think, 12 points at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And they had the normal lineup, which is LeBron James, Deron Williams, Channing Frye, and then I think Korver and Shumpert. All out there at the same time. And they were sort of treading water. And he brought back Love and Irving a little bit sooner than I would have liked. And then that Love and Irving lineup immediately gave up the lead, or not immediately, but sort of slowly gave up the lead until the game was tied. I would have liked to see a little bit more of the Frye, Williams, Korver, Shumpert lineup, plus LeBron. But I don't know.
Frye was getting killed a little too much at that point, I thought. Like, I thought he wasn't going to work out anymore because they started attacking him a lot. But I was okay with him bringing them back. Actually, I had no issues with that, honestly. Because clamoring for them to come back, too.
That's good to hear. I mean, look, I was just watching the game as an observer. And, you know, I don't see anything on the court. Or I don't see everything on the court. And, at the time, I was just sort of like, huh. Yeah, like, I feel like he was almost looking for an excuse to get Love and Irving back a little bit sooner than he otherwise might because he felt a little bit bad about game 3. But look, I might have just concocted that all in my head. I'm not sure.
In general, benching your best players and not having them on the floor for as long as possible is not a good thing. Like, it's been so fine for this series because Kyrie has been so bad and like Love hasn't been great outside of two games. So like, it's been fine in this series, but in general, it's not a good thing. So like,
if you're going to lean one way, you should probably lean toward the start. Dance
you don't want to fall in love with that idea. Like, that's too overreactive, honestly. Like, it's fine to do it one game here and there, like if one guy's just doing really poorly. But in general, you want to shy away from that as much as possible. You want to have your best guys on the floor in crunch time. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Because like, let's say they would have picked up that lead with that lineup, we would be killing him for not bringing the starters back in early enough, right?
Like, that's true. I think I am now actually completely convinced. And if I'm being like completely intellectually honest here, like I'm complaining because he brought them in 90 seconds sooner than I would have liked or something.
Sure,
like this is a tiny nit I'm picking here.
Okay,
that was it for my list. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So one of the things that I learned was that Kyrie has still not figured out offense completely. To me, there were moments in this regular season where he was passing really well. At least it wasn't just moments. It was like a full 3 weeks or 4 weeks where he was passing the ball really well. And it wasn't just because of the assist numbers. It was because he was actually moving the ball well. He was playmaking for his teammates, etc. And he did not do any of that in this series. And I don't know why that was the case, but I still think he has a long way to go before he can be a great offensive player. He's a good offensive player because he's efficient and he can score pretty well. But I still think there's a second level or a third level for him to get to where he can actually be unstoppable, right? And like, he still hasn't figured that out, which is kind of unfortunate because he's been with LeBron for 3 years now, and LeBron is by far one of the smartest players ever, or maybe if not the smartest player ever. And like, you would hope that after playing with him for this long, you would have picked up some of that through osmosis or through whatever, but that's not been the case.
Well, yeah, I mean, for starters, he can listen to LeBron James, and now he's got Deron Williams around too. And you'd think that, maybe it's going to take an off season, or maybe it's going to take losing in like a unfortunate way, or maybe it'll just never happen. But it is frustrating because I feel like he could. It's something about his mental state. Like I said, I've been reading this Windhorse book, and we should probably do an episode about that book just because there's so much good stuff in it. But one of the things in it is I'm 80% through according to my Kindle. So maybe we can do that during the off week here. But in any case, he constantly talks about how Kobe Bryant is, Irving's idol. And I can't think of a worse idol to have. Kobe was a ball hog.
Lance Stevenson could be a idol, but
okay, sure, yeah. Like, I could be his idol and be like, I don't really know if you should mold your game after mine. Not the ideal idol. Let's put it that way. And it's not when you're not shooting well. It would be nice if there were other things he could contribute that could sort of lower the variance in his offensive performance. But for now, that just doesn't really seem to be the case. And in fact, when he's not shooting well, he seems to pass even less and becomes more of a black hole, so it's like this positive feedback loop of negativity. It makes it worse. And I don't know. I don't know if that's going to fix in the timeline I would like it to.
I had three other things, but I think we've already talked about Shump and Lou. So I'll mention the last one. Okay. I think another thing that I saw in this series was that Deron Williams still has a lot to offer.
Hmm.
And it's mostly on the offensive end, but at least his passing can help us a lot. Because we know we're not getting anything from Kyrie right now. So like, at least Deron can be the secondary playmaker to LeBron.
Yeah. The LeBron-Deron pick and roll. Well, two things about that. One is it works really well and it's exciting to see. And it was confusing during the regular season that they weren't doing it much. It takes time to build chemistry. So maybe that's all it was. Two, maybe Irving can see how successful that is for both players involved, both Deron Williams and LeBron James. And, maybe he'll get jealous. Maybe he'll, just sort of... through osmosis or whatever, just see that, and maybe he can incorporate that into his game a little bit more. Because a frequently run LeBron James, Kyrie Irving pick and roll, where one of them passes it more than they currently do, could just be really
He just doesn't see the same lanes. Like, if you ever see Darren and LeBron's pick and roll, like, Darren will make that pass very quickly as soon as the lane opens.
Yeah.
But, like, Kyrie doesn't see it. He's like, okay, I can do it myself. Who cares?
Yeah.
Also, I have an alternative to him listening to or watching Darren and LeBron run this pick and roll and getting better. He may just call up Kobe and be like, what else should I do? And then Kobe will be like, hey, shoot more shots. Because that's going to get you.
Definitely above the break deep twos are really a good shot unassisted. I mean, it's really frustrating to see Kyrie do this. But look, there is still time. I'm hoping he's not injured. I'm concerned that he might have, like, his knee might be bothering him. Although you'd think if his knee was bothering him, he would shoot less and pass more. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him. I'm confused.
I think it's a combination of some sort of knee issue or knee pain, maybe. Maybe it's not an injury, it's just pain. Who knows? Combined with his mentality that he can get any shot he wants at any time he wants. I mean, that's what... Do you remember that interview that David Griffin had with the Fear the Sword? I think we talked about this a couple of days ago.
I actually have the quote. Do you want me to read this?
Yeah,
it's a pretty good quote. Okay. So yeah, this is what David Griffin said. He said... he doesn't like to push the ball. It's just not his nature. He's gotten by in the half court his whole life because his handle is so good. He never felt the urgency to press the ball, whereas most guys develop their game as to what they need to do to succeed. Kai never had to do that. So when you're explaining to him why it's important to push the pace, and I think he was reluctant to do that because I can get mine regardless. Well, it's not necessarily about you. So I think where he's grown and evolved is he's starting to figure that out. There's days where he's as good as any player in the league at his position, and there's days when he's the 198th some best player-adjusted plus-minus player. And there's days where the defensive quintile that our analytics department has him in looks real. There's days where he's highly motivated to do it, you realize he's special. His hands are lightning quick, his feet are lightning quick. When he wants to, he can do whatever he wants. Fortunately for us, we found that in the playoffs, we tend to get best of him. So yeah, Griffin is... I felt like Griffin was kind of throwing him under the bus here. Like, he mentions like 8 things that he's sort of annoyed about Irving.
Yeah, he basically said that Kyrie is crap in the regular season, but he's been okay and he's been good in the playoffs so far, so we'll take it. That's the translation there.
But that is also my read. I think some people would object to that, but that is my read. That's also the truth. I mean, that's the truth. I thought it was also interesting. He talks about this 198th some best player adjusted plus
is
minus
that by
player.
RPM? I don't know.
No, he was 57th in RPM this year. So I wonder if they have their own, because he calls it, the exact thing he said was player adjusted plus minus player. So I don't know, like, and you know, maybe it was transcribed a little bit. So yeah, I don't know if they have their own internal metric or if he's talking about ABPM or some other thing that's publicly available. But yeah, I just thought, somebody must have told him at some point that he's like the 200th best player, and that sort of stuck with him.
Maybe last year that was the case, and maybe he's just using that.
Could be. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because he was pretty bad last year.
But yeah, I mean, it's clear to me that Griffin knows the conundrum with Irving, which is that he is sort of crappy in the regular season. And as spectacular as he is to watch, like, the advanced metrics really detest him in the regular season. But last postseason, he was, you know, the second best player on the court at times. And
he hasn't been that. That's not been the case this playoffs.
Yeah, we haven't seen that this playoffs. Maybe, yeah, we've got, you know, 3 rounds left, hopefully, and we'll see if it happens. I don't have super high hopes for that just because I think that the sample size of hundreds of regular season games is probably more important than dozens of playoff games. But like LeBron gets better in the playoffs. And so, you know, I could make the same argument against LeBron getting better in the playoffs. So, yeah, I just don't know. I'm sure we'll have more to say.
I'm also glad he mentioned the defensive quintile. Because like that means they have him in a really low percentile in general,
yes,
for defense, which makes sense.
And I like that they have people divided into quintiles because there's a lot of noise in the numbers. I loved reading that quote from him because it was like, oh, okay, well, Griffin gets it. Because at times I worry if they do. But yeah, just there were so many little hints in that.
One last thing. If you go to his Twitter account and see who he's following, it's a lot of the analytics guys. So that's always been Griffin. Very encouraging for me.
Oh, that is good. That is good. There were a few other things in that interview, but we've been going for 60 minutes now, so we should wrap it up. Do you have anything you want to say? We'll get into that stuff in a later episode, because it was a really interesting interview. But
and we have an off week, so.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to need topics. You have anything else you want to chat about?
No, I'm good.
All right, so that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @cavalyticsnba.